So before we get started today, I wanted to let you know about a really exciting opportunity, which I really hope that some of you will join me on. So from the 30th of September to the 2nd of October of this year, I will be holding my annual coastal adventure in Croyde Bay in North Devon in the UK. This is a fantastic weekend. We go surfing, we go coasteering. We've got a wonderful yoga teacher joining us, and it's all surrounded by a backdrop of reflection, resilience coaching sessions, a chance to talk about what we're learning when we're out there in the water. And we also have our amazing chef, Steph, joining us too. So you will be so well fed and looked after and catered for. We stay in gorgeous accommodation, which is right next to the water. So right next to the beach in Croyde. So you can wander out when you get a spare moment, head down to the beach and just enjoy everything that that beautiful place has to offer. So if you want to find out some more information, it's www.resiliencework.co.uk. You can get in touch with me via my email, nikki@resiliencework.co.uk, or drop me a DM on Instagram, Resilience at Work. And yes, it would be amazing to see some of you in the surf. So now on with the show. Hello and welcome to the Everyday Adventure Podcast. My name is Nikki Bass, and I will be bringing you thoughts, ideas, and stories from some incredible guests to hopefully inspire you to live more adventurously in your everyday lives. So today, I am really excited to welcome Pammy Jahal to the podcast. Pammy is the founder of Backbone CIC, which is an organisation that aims to celebrate diversity through adventure. So through her work and the work with the CIC, she provides opportunities for Black, Asian, ethnic minorities and marginalised communities to connect with nature and the outdoors, and also connect with the outdoors and environmental sectors where they may not previously have access to. So I was first connected with Pammy via Moose Mutlow. I think he was one of my guests who was previously in the series. And when I came off the podcast, the first thing that Moose said to me was, you have got to speak to Pammy. I think we'd spoken quite a lot about access and accessibility to nature and the outdoors as part of that episode. So please do check it out if you've not listened to it. But also the first person, like I said, he mentioned was Pammy. He said the work she has done and has been doing for quite a long period of time is absolutely inspirational, and get in touch. So obviously I went and looked Pammy straight up. And I think it was the first time. I'm going to just mention one of the things on her website, and I was just like, absolutely yes. And I'll paraphrase here. But for some people, adventure is, you know, climbing a mountain or getting out there and doing something really huge. And for some people, it's just leaving the city and getting out into nature. And that forms the basis of the work that they do. And like I said, so many parallels with what we're trying to achieve with this podcast as well. So, yeah. So I reached out to Pammy, and I am so delighted she agreed to join me. So, Pammy, welcome to the show. It's so lovely to have you here.
Yeah. Thank you very much for inviting us. And I'm looking forward to a good old blether with you. So fire away.
Excellent.
And thank you, Ruth.
So I guess the first question has got to be, I mean, where did the inspiration come from to set up Backbone? And I know you've been going for quite a while now. So, you know, where did the idea come from? And I guess how has it evolved over time that you've been involved with it?
Yeah, that's a very common question that I get asked. Mm. And you talk about Moose Mutlow. You know, Moose Mutlow was very much part of an era, my very early days in the industry. And I say it as an industry and as a sector, and recognizing that my early days in the sector, there was something missing. And what that thing was missing was people that looked like me and had a perspective like me. And I was also fed up of watching the white male dominance of our industry, and very much being a reciprocant of some of that behavior, and recognizing actually, well, I can do something about this. I can either choose to stay and say this is okay, or I can walk away and decide to do something different. And it was a very traumatic time in my life, actually. I chose to leave the industry where I was working with Moose, actually. And he was around when I left, and he saw me leave and knows exactly the reasons that I left that whole conventional sector, I suppose, a conventional organisation, and decided that actually what I want to do is come back to Britain. I was in America at the time, and ask my communities if this is something that they wanted, if they wanted to engage with the great outdoors. And if they did, I could offer them something. And that's exactly what I did. I cried across the Atlantic. And I remember the stewardess saying to me, "Are you all right?" I was like, "No, I need to do this. I need to write and cry and all that stuff." And I landed and I haven't looked back. And I knocked on loads of community doors and said, community organisations that were led and run for Black, Asian and ethnic members. And they all unanimously said, "Yes, we want this." So I just took women, Black women, out into the great outdoors and gave them the skills and the tools to lead expeditions for themselves. And we had a great time doing it. So it was very informal, but brilliant. And that was in 95.
My goodness. I love your point about sort of, you know, it came from quite an organic place, just in terms of actually, firstly, your own sense of where, I guess, your own place in the sector and the space in terms of what you felt was missing there in that gap. You know, and it sounds like, you know, I mean, to be going since 1995 in itself is just incredible, because it's not the easiest sector and industry to work in, I'm sure. And I'm just wondering that, because there's been quite a lot more of a focus and spotlight on accessibility into the outdoors, and particularly, I think, with Black Lives Matter and with, you know, I suppose the energy that came and the attention that's come with that. But I can imagine going for such a long time that actually there have been quite a lot of barriers in your way to do the work that you've been doing. And I was just wondering, you know, what are some of those? Or maybe you haven't, you know, I mean, what are some of the barriers that either you've encountered or that you've seen, I guess, participants in your programs come up against?
I'm going to rephrase the question, but I'm going to answer it the way I want.
Okay. Absolutely.
I think what I want to, you know, Black Lives Matter, and, you know, we've had a lot of, the globe has had a lot of time for 2 years to contemplate and how we are with each other and accessibility, and nature has played a huge part in the whole reflection period, you know, and that's very much been part of my personal life, reflection in nature throughout my life. And I think as a globe, we've been doing that, and we've recognised that we haven't been kind to some people, and that the word barriers, it's not even barriers, it's much as inappropriate behaviour. And we have now, you know, and it's not just the outdoor sector, it's many sectors that have been allowed to get away with inappropriate behaviours that are outright discriminatory. And nobody's gone about and challenged it. We've been challenging it since I started in 1995. And we continue to challenge that. But we continue to challenge it when Black Lives Matter and the lockdown and this huge, you know, what's wonderful right now, we've got a huge influx of some amazing, young, vibrant, Black, Asian, ethnic-led organisations that we have the privilege of working with and helping to develop right now through our training academy. You know, and that's just happened in the last few years, and they are the future of our sector. And they're stronger than Backbone, and they're stronger than Pammy Johal on our own. However, we have for 40 years been shouting and bawling and challenging in the sector. Some of those challenges have just been not received very well because the organisations are not ready to hear it. Some have been going, yeah, we need to do something about it, but actually haven't thrown their resources at it, because you can talk about it. And that's what's been happening, hasn't it, for many years. And even now, you know, we've been stuck in these 2 years of conversation. And Backbone's very much an action-orientated organisation. So last year, we set up a symposium because I was frustrated from hearing this conversation again. You know, don't forget, Backbone set up in the 90s, and this conversation about lack of diversity in the great outdoors, we were shouting about in the 90s, and you just need to go onto our website and look, we were on Countryfile in the year 2000, and we've been in the media since 1995 shouting and bawling about the inequalities of the sector. You know, we talk about football, we talk about cricket, we talk about other sectors that are blatantly, I'm going to say, racist. and blatantly discriminatory, and it's taken a huge force to challenge that recently. But there, folks are fighting a huge institution. And I would say that our sector, the outdoor sector, is also an institution that has been allowed to get away with things. And it's not necessarily individuals saying, oh, God, we're not having any more folks of that don't look like me or think like me in the sector, as much as it's just not been challenged enough and not enough resources. So what we did last year was we set up a symposium, and I challenged all that quite blatantly, and I've called it excuses for inactivity that the sector has used for 40 years. And some of that excuses for inactivity are what I call repetitive research syndrome. You know, we look at it now, the last 2 years, I reckon researchers have got their work made out, really, because we're spending an awful lot of money and resources and time and energy in validating the inequalities in the great outdoors. Yeah, I go, well, do we really need it? I remember in the 90s, that research. But more importantly, just walk into any established sector organisation and look around you, and you will not see many people that are not white. You know, the statistics are out there, and they've been out there for years. I think there's about 1%, less than 1%, that are in volunteering roles, that are in staffing roles, that are in board roles, that have got anything to do with an infrastructure of an organisation. And many organisations are also reaching out to participants from Black, Asian and ethnic communities. But they're reaching out, getting funding, but they don't know how to reach out. So they're reaching out to BME community organisations to do their work for them. So all of this is, for us, what we would say, unethical behaviour. So you can pull down, and it's happening right now, by the way. You know, this last week I've had three organisations call us because they need to spend money to do with Black, Asian and ethnic members and trying to engage with them. And they're asking us for a quick fix. And what we've said is, no, we'll offer you a process and consultation, how you can reach out to groups, because you need to reach out to groups so that you have a direct relationship with those groups rather than backbone. So I think, has that answered your question? Or have I gone off on a divergence?
It's answered it 100 times and more, gosh. I mean, I think there is so much just to pick up on there. And I think, you know, like I said, the first thing I think that just really comes across is just, like you say, this has been your lived experience. This has been your world for, I mean, I'm not very good at maths, especially not in the afternoon, but since the mid-90s, gosh. And, you know, I think your point, you know, that point about how the conversation keeps being had and almost the conversation becoming a way of avoiding the action, and the action involves actually really hard, painful work. Yes. not just, well, let's just, you know, change the photos on our, you know, on our brochures or on social media, and then look, we've done it, now we're inclusive. You know, yes. It's that sort of fundamental change that needs to happen. And I suppose that's what comes through for me listening to you, is actually that work has been ongoing for so long, but actually maybe the willingness to engage is slightly altered, but that actually there isn't a quick fix to this. This has got to be
I'll comment on that. Sorry, Nikki.
No, carry on.
You've absolutely hit the nail on the head with regards to that. It's hard work. And the hard work is, if I was to sum that up, it's lack of knowledge, confidence and access to Black, Asian and ethnic members. You know, people want to, the organisation, folks in many organisations want to reach out, but just don't know how to go about it. Or they do actually, but they just don't have the confidence to pick up the phone. And when I tell them the reason that we're successful is not just because I'm an Asian woman, and I have quite a vibrant personality, and I can make folks do anything if I put my mind to it. And
I have no doubt about weather, that.
You know, I can actually take them by the hand and make that happen. It's actually the confidence just to pick up the phone. You know, and I've had folks work with me. I'm talking sector organisers, rangers and sector organisers work with me, and they still want me to hold their hand. I'm going, no, this is now over to you. And that includes our community groups as well. They don't have the confidence, the knowledge or the access to opportunities in nature. That's getting better with all the new groups that are coming up, and folks are demanding it and owning it, which is wonderful. And I do think that things are moving and they are shaping as we go forward, but there's still a lot of work to be done. And I particularly want to mention that those are organisations that are membership organisations. You know, we've got big established national governing body organisations and national organisations that have been established for quite some time that are membership driven. And whether we like it or not, membership driven means we have members of the general public. And unfortunately, members of the general public, there are people that are racist and discriminatory. And unfortunately, they have filtered into membership body organisations. And some of the conversations that I've been having with organisations, their biggest challenge is, well, we don't want to lose our membership. And I thought, well, actually, if you want to change and you want to change your audience, you have to challenge. You absolutely have to challenge your membership body. And your membership bodies are made up of the general public. And yes, the response I tend to get, well, but they've been with us for 30, 40 years. And I'm going, that's exactly it. Your organisation has not changed for 30, 40 years. I've been in the industry for 30, 40 years. And I know that you haven't changed. And the reason you haven't changed, because your infrastructure allows membership bodies and members to keep the status quo, when clearly the status quo was 40 years ago. And our audience and our communities have changed. And that goes also for community groups, by the way, not just with outdoor organisations. And that's, but for sector, what I would call sector organisations, they have a, they're a service industry, so they have a responsibility to provide a service to all sectors of the community. So really the hard work has to begin with the service industry. So, and it is hard work, and it takes time, it takes resources, it takes commitments. And I'll give you an example. You know, we've had organisations that have just brought in their EDI officers, and it's great, you know, because now there's loads of funds to be had. So we've got all this staff that is coming in to work on equality and diversity. And I met a new member of staff, and I said, well, yeah, come out and join our groups. And I said, the next one, and months in advance, I said, we've got a residential up at in Scotland, in the middle of nowhere, and it's Saturday, Sunday. Come and join us on Saturday morning. Oh, no, I don't work weekends. I said, oh, God, okay, you don't work weekends. And this is definitely another systemic issue within the within our sector is, most sector, conventional, government-operated civil servants, I suppose, 9 to 5, Monday to Friday. Well, guess what? You know, my work, Backbone's work, it doesn't happen 9 to 5, Monday to Friday. I don't have a life. I work weekends and I work evenings, because most folks from Black, Asian and ethnic communities, they work. They have other professions and they work. So you're not going to access them Monday to Friday, 9 to 5. You know, so it's, we're just asking the sector to tip the way it operates on its head. So the sector has to do the hard work. I call it climbing a mountain, and it's a really uncomfortable mountain. Yet communities, and most of the communities that I work with, some of them don't speak English, some of them don't read and write English, some of them really had to climb a mountain to find sector organisations where they can access what they're offering. And I'm asking the other way around, I'm asking folks now, organisations, to do that. So that's kind of how we're addressing it. And we're at that, you know, we've been fortunate enough to have a wonderful conversation with the National Lottery, their Growing Great Ideas grant, and we were awarded funds to set up the academy. So we're supporting everybody, particularly the new and established organisations that are led by Black, Asian and ethnic members, to become really robust, to be safe and to be sustainable. And they're lapping up the training that we have to offer. And we're also offer consultations to more established sector organisations, so that they can engage with the broader members of society. Has that kind of given you some information then, Nikki?
It's given me an awful lot of information. Gosh, you know, it's so complex. I think, you know, yes. I guess the word that struck me then as well was was comfort and getting uncomfortable as well. And that, like you said, with that point about the memberships, and actually it's comfortable for the organizations to stay with, you know, what they know and what resonates with their current members, but it's also comfortable for the members to, you know, and often people will join, I guess, groups or organizations because they're like, well, these are, you know, people I relate to. And, but, you know, so it's, you know, it's having an impact at all of those different levels and forcing everybody to get out of their comfort zones. And people are resistant, like you said, even if on the surface the words are there and that, you know, that the intent is there, but actually getting out comfortable is much more challenging. I was just wondering, I mean, given how long you've been working in this area and, you know, the amount, the number of people you've worked with and taken through your programs, I mean, what are, when you see people come through your programs, and like you said, they might not have had, you know, much access to the outdoors or not had much experience in this field, and they come through the work that you do, I mean, what are some of the benefits you see that brings them, not only in terms of, you know, the actual physical activity, but also sort of more broadly, I suppose? And what does it bring to you as well?
Well, for me, it's just a joy. It's just a joy to, you know, I call it, you know, my personal driver is entice and excite folks to love nature, to get that wow moment in nature. And when you get that wow moment, people want more of it. It's an addictive, it's addiction. Mm. And then they spread the news and they bring others out. And then when they come out into nature and they do go wow, they go, wow, actually, I want to understand it a little bit more. And when you understand it a little bit more, you'll want to protect it. Boom. Bob's your uncle, you know, that, yeah. That. So we're talking about climate change. We're talking about environmental protection. We're talking about all those buzzwords that go on a strategic senior level, but we bring it down to everyday wording. So we don't even use, you know, climate change. We don't talk environmental protection. We just go, look, isn't this wonderful? Let's tell you a little bit more about this. Let's tell you about what you're doing. You know, just simple, simplifying language. And so what do the participants get it? What I tell you now, I'm going to give you, and this is just one example of many of the same. We've had members join us where they could not speak English, write English, read English, couldn't look me in the eye, and they have not been able to ride a bike or know how to access the great outdoors. They walk away after a 6-week program, looking me in the eye, and being able to ride a bike and wanting more, to the point where they are now community leaders in their own right. They are cycle ride leaders. They are cycle coaches. They lead and run their own groups, and they've set up their own organizations. We have a plethora of our leadership alumni that are doing exactly that. And they're not owned by Backbone. They're owned by their own organizations, and they are independent and freelance in their own right. And they get paid work. We pay them. When we bring our alumni in, we pay them to work with us. So it really is about valuing folks. And that's another thing that I feel that right now with the Black Lives Matter and you know, diversity being on the agenda, you know, a lot of organisations are reaching out to some fantastic folks and just saying, would you give us a talk? Would you do this, and expecting that talk for nothing? And I go, no, stop that inappropriate behaviour. Let's validate and value folks when they bring in expertise to your table. Expertise around something that you cannot do at this moment in time. So that's kind of another one of our drivers.
No, and that's such an important point as well. I think that sense that, you know, because because it's important to you, you're willing to share, or you should be sharing that knowledge with everyone no matter what, rather than actually, this is expertise, this is lived experience, this is knowledge that people need, but also needs to be properly valued. Yes. I think, you know, and it's so interesting how that gets undermined. I've seen it happen, you know, and it's, and the problem is the message it sends in the end, which is that we value this, but not, you know, it's about the financial aspect, but I think it's also about the message that implicitly sends, which is we value this, but not that much. And I think, because that's the bit you internalize, going, well, actually, if you really value this, Yes. Put your money where your mouth is. Yeah.
Exactly what I was going to say. Put your money where your mouth is. And, you know, and that goes with organisations do have resources, but they choose not to prioritise the resources. Right. So we can talk about it and say, oh, yeah, we're talking about it. And we can invite folks to do this and that. And we can then tick our right boxes and say, yeah, we've had this and we've done that training. But actually, let's get down to engagement, because real engagement means action. And action means not a bolt on action that is of a 1 year, 2 year, 3 year. It's something that is integrated into every aspect of an organization. So you need to put the resources there.
No, absolutely. I'm just thinking, looking forward, because, you know, that you've got this amazing platform now and the work that you've done, which, like you said, you know works, you know makes a difference. And sort of when you look out sort of 2, 3, 10 years time, I mean, what are your aspirations for Backbone, but also, I guess, more widely for the work that you're doing?
Well, I'm retiring. I should have been retiring this year, actually. But then the National Lottery winner said, oh, go on, get on with it for the next 3 to 5 years. I'm like, okay, well, I will. So as the future of Backbone, you know, Backbone, there's only three directors, and we are a project-based organisation. So when our projects end, we end. And but our projects are all come out of consultations and need, you know, so it just, things have just organically evolved. So where Backbone goes after the training academy, our hope is that the training academy will be shipped off to other organizations so they deliver it themselves, and that we're no longer needed, or it just or Backbone goes part of that process. Our aspirations are that the new organisations that are out there, they are absolutely 100% recognised as part of the sector. Because even now, the language that we use, and that we're guilty of that, and our academy is changing that. And one of the first things we said is that everybody that joins our academy is part of the sector, not BME groups, community groups and sector organisations. We have new groups, new organisations, emerging organisations that are led by Black, Asian and ethnic members that are sector organisations. Backbone has been a sector organisation for 40 odd years. So it's a matter of the perspective of established sector organisations that are predominantly white to actually look at things with another lens and recognise there is talent, incredible talent and energy out there. Hence, folks, you know, organisations are self-leading, you know. They're basically saying to the conventional sectors, bugger off, we don't need you. And good for them, because it hasn't worked. I know for 40 years, it hasn't worked enough for some organisations, for some communities. So unless the organisations really kind of jump ship and look at things differently and operate differently, they will carry on being marginalised by who they call marginalised groups.
Yeah, and it's so interesting. I know, I spoke to the founder of Black Girls Height, Rhianne, and also Kelly Smith recently as well. And I remember one of the points she made is about the abuse, if it can only be called, and the comebacks people say to her about, well, how come you're for Black women only? Why, you know, you're not very inclusive and that sort of thing, which I think in some way sounds like, you know, it very much cuts to the heart of what you're saying, that actually in order to drive change and accessibility and inclusivity, actually sometimes it is required to actually drive that change yourself and take groups that you know have not been represented or haven't felt that they were included or part of something and go, actually, you absolutely have a place. But I think carry on, Pammy.
No, I was just saying, Rhianne and Kelly from Black Girls Hike, they're also part of our academy. You know, we're offering them training. They've done their outdoor first aid. We had the Black Girls Hike UK on the outdoor first aid last weekend, and they'll be joining again in Birmingham and doing some consultations with Rhianne to just a wonderful organisation. And that's a classic organisation that is going places. And, you know, you were saying about, you know, why is it exclusive? Well, I totally agree with you. It's been exclusive because the organisations that have been out there have not been inclusive. So therefore, it has had to be exclusive. But also, when you do exclusive work, which we do quite a bit with just women, black women, it's so they have the confidence and competence to go back into an integrated world and shout and bawl about their confidence and competence, as opposed to being stepped down or not heard in an uninclusive environment.
No, absolutely. And I think, yeah, I mean, just listening to you talk as well is that, often people, the other comments you get are, well, nobody's stopping you, or it's, the outdoors doesn't choose, and all of these side of things. And, even just listening to you speak and share your experiences as well, underlines the fact that by making those comments are so dismissive of the experiences that people actually have when they do, and that actually having a place where you feel psychologically safe, where you feel like you matter and you belong and you are valued, absolutely is fundamental to the confidence to actually do that in the first place.
Let me give you examples of that. You know, this thing about we are inclusive. Well, if you go onto a website, my website, your That Bones website, you will see and read all this, but there's some really good examples I'm going to give you. I went for an interview for a very established organization. And when I went, I looked around and thought, oh my God, you know, this is I don't relate to any of this. But I am a good flipping outdoor practitioner. One thing I do believe in, and that is my ability as an outdoor practitioner. You know, I've got all qualified, all that stuff, experience, and I'm confident, and I will do things out the box. So I will not follow a conventional way of doing it. Anyway, I applied for a job and I didn't get it. And I said, can you give me some feedback? And they said, you were like a square peg trying to fit into a round hole. I said, that's interesting, because I can take you to the cleaners with that one legally, unless you give me some feedback. They never, ever to this day have given me feedback, specific feedback, as to how I was a round peg trying to fit into a round peg, square peg, whatever, you know, not fitting in. Another one I've had is I was late for work. Admittedly, I should have been told off. I was climbing and I was late, and they said, we will never hire one of yous again. This is language that has been acceptable in the industry. I was then another organization awarded a considerable amount of money to run the first outdoor training program for Black, Asian, and ethnic members. And it was very, very successful. I had invited the organisation and all levels of the organisation to come and join us, come and see what we're doing. Nobody did, apart from the practitioners on the ground. And then when it came to doing the report and the evaluation, one of the first things that the person that was having a chat with me said, well, how do we know it wasn't just a group of your mates having fun? So I just walked out. I walked out of the office and never work with them again. And that's real. That's been going on for 40 years. And that's what I mean about membership and established ways of working and operating. That kind of behavior has been going on unchallenged, and it's not going on unchallenged anymore.
Yeah, and that's pretty scary for some people, but like you said, actually, it's very long overdue. I mean, I often, I usually ask when I have guests on, I ask them, what's the one piece of advice you would give somebody wanting to get started on their own adventure? But I think in your case, what I'd like to know is, looking at the sector and the industry as it is now, what's the, and I know there are so many things that need to change, but what's the one thing that, that people within the sector, within the industry, starting tomorrow, starting now, could do that would make a difference, that would start changing the quality of what's happening? I know it's a big question, sorry. So feel free to give me more than one.
So my immediate reaction, and it's a reaction, I have to say, I'm going to give you a reaction, and then I'm going to give you a
Okay.
thoughtful
No.
answer. My immediate reaction is, get rid of the old ones. You know, those that are stuck in their ways, and they are there in your organization, and the info, and so you need to get rid of folks that will not, that are stuck of 30, 40 years ago, of way that the organization operates. So that's my immediate reaction. So my professional response would be to change your infrastructure, which is basically saying the same thing. So change your infrastructure to really tip it on its head and really shake it and ask yourselves, are the some of our the sector's infrastructure is stale and it's not progressive and meeting the needs of today's society? So how can we change that infrastructure, which will then change the perspective of the organisation?
Amazing. And hopefully, I really hope that someone's listening and starts taking you up on that advice and doing that work. Pammy, that's been absolutely incredible. If people want to find out more about Backbone, about the work that you're doing, where can they go?
Backbone.uk.net is the website. Do visit the media page because it has a lot of challenge. These conversations go a wee bit further. And do visit our Training Academy page on our website, because that tells you what we're doing within the Training Academy. Follow us again on the website. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. I'm absolutely rubbish at that, but you can follow us and we'll do what we can. So yeah, but the best thing is just to pick up the phone or pick up the phone and email me. I am stuck in my ways and I need a good slapping with perspectives. And I have two directors that do help us with that, and the newer organisations that are helping us with that.
Brilliant. No, I'll pop all those links in the show notes as well, so people can go and find out all about it and get in touch. Thank you so much for your time today. It's hugely appreciated. I know how busy you are. So yeah, thanks once again. It's been absolutely wonderful to have you here. And I wish you all the best of luck going forward with all the work you're doing too. Yeah. Take care.
Thank you, Nikki.
Cheers. Bye. So a massive thank you to Pammy for coming on and for such a powerful conversation. I was left reflecting on what she said for quite a long time after our chat, and for being my final guest of season 5. Can't believe it. Here we are, mid-June. It's taken a little bit longer to get here than I anticipated. Thanks, House Move. But yeah, so many wonderful conversations. I think as I reflect back on this season, and in fact, you know, over the course of all the conversations I've had so far, there's one thing that really sticks out for me. And I think it links with the point that Pammy made around we can have conversations or we can talk about things and continue to discuss and sort of think about how things might change. But actually, it's the action that makes the difference. It's actually doing something. It's doing the work. And I was just thinking on all of the guests that I've had, I think the one thing that they have had in common throughout all of this is that they have all taken some form of action to change something. And that might be to change their personal circumstances or their own perception of what they're capable of. It might be to change the narrative around adventure and around outdoor spaces. It might be to open up new possibilities for people and for communities and really to think about how the outdoor sports, but also this idea of adventure and taking risk in some form can be more accessible to more people. But yeah, I just wanted to go back to this point about action, because I think it does two things, certainly for me as a host, but hopefully for you as a listener too. I think it is both inspiring in that it gives us ideas and different ways and perspectives of looking at things. But I also think it's empowering, because we get the how, we get the what can we do rather than what can't we do. And I think with so much of what is in the news or so much of what we hear, we can end up with a sense of there's nothing that we can do. It. We feel powerless and we feel at the mercy of other factors and other forces. And hopefully what all of my guests bring, and they certainly do for me, is the sense of what can you do, what is possible, how you can make a difference and how you can change things. I'm going to leave you with that thought. As always, please do reach out and get in touch. You can find me on Instagram, Resilience at Work, or Everyday Adventure Pod. You can find me on Facebook, Resilience at Work. You can reach out to me via LinkedIn, Nikki Bass, or you can get in touch via my website, resiliencework.co.uk. Now, obviously, this podcast is now part of the Tremula Network, so please do check out the other podcasts in this network as well. In the meantime, I would like to say a massive thank you to my wonderful editor, Fran Tarauskis, who some of you may know, has her own wonderful podcasts as well, On the Outside and Seize Your Adventure. Fran has been endlessly patient with me this season in moving timelines and getting things out, and I cannot thank her enough. Otherwise, I hope you have a truly incredible summer. I'll be back in the autumn with season 6, so I look forward to speaking to you then. Take care. Bye.